Welcome to the Baby Weight Podcast, brought to you by Omaha Better Birth Project. Omaha Better Birth Project is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to decrease inequities in childbirth by providing access to doula services, childbirth education, and prenatal and postpartum support for low-income and teen families. Find out more about Omaha Better Birth Project online at www.omahabetterbirth.org. We are so glad that you could join us on this episode of the Baby Weight Podcast. Sam here, along with Emily, your hosts, and we are joined today by Allie. She's a mother from right here in Omaha. Allie is going to share her birth experience with their second child. But before we dive into her story, I do want to give a few trigger warnings. This story may be difficult for some of our listeners to hear, so please consider these warnings before you continue on. In Allie's birth story, there will be discussion of preeclampsia, surgical birth, postpartum hemorrhage, significant blood loss and transfusions, as well as hysterectomy and near maternal death. So here's a little background on Allie's birth experiences. Allie has what's called uterine didelphys, which is a uterine condition that is present in about 1 out of 2,000 people with uteruses worldwide. But we don't hear much about it. If you want to learn more about that condition, definitely check out the show notes after this episode. Allie has a history of preeclampsia, which resulted in an induction at 34 weeks with her first pregnancy. So with her second pregnancy, she was induced at 38 weeks in order to avoid a reoccurrence of preeclampsia. The induction resulted in a failed instrumental delivery and subsequent surgical birth. And following the birth, Allie experienced a postpartum hemorrhage and required significant blood transfusions and ultimately ended in a total abdominal hysterectomy.
Thank you, Allie, so much for joining us today on the Baby Weight Podcast. We're really excited to talk to you about your pregnancy experiences. Let's just dive right in. So we do want to leave enough time to talk about your second pregnancy. That's really the one we're here to talk about. But can you walk us through your first pregnancy and labor and delivery experience, kind of the highlights of it and what that was like for you?
So with my first pregnancy, I was induced at 34 weeks due to preeclampsia. I had a pretty good pregnancy up until then. And then my blood pressure just started to skyrocket, and my doctor thought it would be best to go ahead and induce me at 34 weeks. And it was a pretty easy, it was a pretty good, labor delivery up until I had my first daughter, Willow, and then she was so early, we both ended up having to transfer to a different hospital. She was in the NICU at a hospital in Omaha, and I had given birth at a hospital in Council Bluffs. So, just due to her young age, we had to be transferred.
Wow. So, how long were you guys separated for?
Oh, gosh. We were probably... Well, with preeclampsia, they put you on magnesium, so that made me really out of it and unable to really care for her, and they had her in the nursery for most of the night because her blood sugar was so low, so we weren't with each other for probably the first 24 hours that often. Once we got transferred to the other hospital, I was more with it and able to be with her in the NICU.
Yeah. So at what point, I guess, did they diagnose you with uterine didelphys? Was that during your ultrasounds did they find that out, or was that delivery?
Yeah. So actually, when I was a high schooler, I had an MRI done for something unrelated to my uterus. And the doctor that read the MRI found that I did have uterine didelphys, which is basically having two separate systems, so two uteruses, two cervixes. In some cases, some women can have two vaginas. But I just had two uteruses and then two cervixes. And so we knew that going into my pregnancy. We were always told, it may be hard to get pregnant. It might be hard to keep the pregnancy, things like that. So we got married and we wanted to start trying right away. And we were so lucky to be able to get pregnant pretty quick and really not have any issues up until I developed the preeclampsia.
Did that diagnosis play any role in your pregnancy? Like, did they change their care in any way?
For sure. Yep. I was monitored by the maternal fetal medicine doctors pretty closely. I would say probably once a month at the very beginning. And then as time started, you know, into the second, third trimester, it was almost every 2 weeks. And then at the very end, it was every week.
Yeah, that sounds like it would have some impact there.
Time consuming and, you know, nervous too.
Mm-hmm. How did you prepare for your first labor? Did you have a doula? Did you take any classes, have a birth plan, those types of things?
You know, I was pretty naive going into the whole situation. My daughter was born on the day that our birth class was scheduled. So we missed that. I just kind of read some things online. I didn't really do much preparation. I wish I would have done more or known more. I just ultimately like trusted my doctors 1,000%.
Yeah. Well, and what are the chances you're going to go into labor the day that you're supposed to take your class? Shoot.
Yeah, it was honestly just my luck.
Yeah. So when you had your first child, were you able to have a vaginal delivery? Did you have a surgical delivery? I know you said you were induced. Was there talk of a C-section because of the didelphys, or how did that play?
So, you know, there was really never a question about, you know, me not ever being able to deliver vaginally. So my doctor was like pro vaginal delivery from the very beginning, which I was super thankful for. She had had other patients that had the same issue and had successful vaginal delivery. So I was kind of always in the back of my mind that we were going to do that. And I was lucky enough that with Willow, my first pregnancy, we were able to do a vaginal delivery.
Yeah. How was your recovery after that then? Was it pretty standard compared to what we normally see, or?
I definitely don't think so. I think with my situation and having to be transferred to a totally different hospital, you know, via ambulance, because I was on the magnesium, they couldn't discharge me. So I think it was just a little bit different, just getting kind of lost in the mix of things at the new hospital. But yeah, I ended up having to have an episiotomy with this delivery, and I dealt with like an infection with that, and just, yeah, it was hard, and just kind of transitioning to like the NICU life and being there for 17 days with Willow, and also trying to heal myself, not really knowing what to expect or what's normal.
Yeah. So once you and Willow were able to come home, do you feel like you were able to have adequate support with either your partner or family to kind of help heal and to kind of bond then, since you were kind of delayed?
Yeah, we definitely had a ton of support from our family, friends. I had a, you know, follow-up appointments with the doctor, which was my OB, which was good. Yeah, I felt pretty supported after the fact.
Wonderful. I hate to put you on the spot here, but what's one thing that you think you either did or had with you during your postpartum time, either with Willow or your second child, that really you think was the most beneficial? Like, you were just like, if you had one item, you'd tell moms, like, make sure you get this or make sure you do this.
Yeah, no, that is a great question. For Willow, the first delivery, the vaginal delivery, I just had such a hard time with recovery just from the episiotomy and things like that. So just honestly being prepared for like the things that you'll need for that, like ice pads, you know.
Yeah, tuck pads and
all that stuff is so important. And just having it just in case. And like with Rosalie, my second child, I did have all that stuff just in case. And I returned it after the fact because it ended up being vaginal, but.
Right. So speaking of Rosalie, that's a wonderful kind of segue into your second pregnancy. So going into the second pregnancy with a history of preeclampsia, what did that pregnancy look like? What was your experience? How was it different or how was it the same pregnancy-wise?
Sure. Yeah. So pregnancy-wise, it was honestly pretty similar to my first pregnancy. It was pretty uneventful, which was so great. I just had a little bit more anxiety during that pregnancy just because I was expecting something to go wrong because it did with Willow. And I just felt like in my gut the whole time, like something was going to happen, something was wrong. So I probably drove my OBs insane, but I just always wanted to be sure like my blood pressure was okay and things like that, just because I didn't want to have another premature baby.
Yeah. Did you have to, or did you choose to continue to see the MFM doctors with Rosalie's pregnancy as well then, or? Okay.
Well, they followed me just as close the second time around, which was really great.
Yeah.
Reassuring.
So, absolutely. So talk us through, if I remember correctly, you were also induced with Rosalie. Is that right?
Yep. So they induced me at 38 weeks and 3 days with Rosalie, just because my blood pressure was a little borderline high. It wasn't bad at all, but just to be safe, they wanted to do that.
Okay.
Go past 39 weeks with my history. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's dive into then what that induction experience was like for you. You know, start with arriving at the hospital and kind of what happened from there.
So with Rosalie, we ended up delivering at a hospital in Omaha that had a NICU just in case that were to need to be used. And the induction process was great. You know, it felt like a very normal pregnancy. I was walking the halls the whole day trying to, you know, get things progressing. And finally, I got an epidural. And then after that, things moved pretty quick, which was good. And then it was time to push. Yeah.
So what happened at the pushing stage? Because you mentioned this wasn't a vaginal delivery. So when did the decision happen to go to C-section?
Yeah. So during the pushing, when I went and started pushing, I think we pushed for about 30 minutes, and unfortunately her head was faced the wrong way. It was sunny side up, and Willow's was the same way. And it's just so hard to push a baby out when it's that way. And I just remember it feeling so hard, and completely like there was no progress at all. And then, her heart rate started, you know, dropping. And so the doctor got very concerned about that. And he kind of watched it for a minute or so. I don't know if it was a minute. It felt like a minute. And then, he had said, you know, her heart rate continues to drop. We're going to have to either do, you know, we're going to have to do forceps. And if that doesn't work, then a C-section. So they went ahead and tried the forceps forceps, and that failed. They were unable to get her out that way, which was very unfortunate. So then, they rushed me into an emergency C-section.
So it's at this point, if I'm remembering correctly, that you kind of felt like something was wrong, right?
Yeah. Yes. I remember being rushed back. You know, I remember looking at my doctor and saying, I just don't want a hemorrhage. I don't want a hemorrhage. I just don't want to bleed out. And I kept saying that to them. And they're like, no, you'll be fine. And I just didn't feel fine at that moment. I felt like something was really wrong going back there, but I was, you know, thinking to myself, I've never been in this situation before. Maybe this is just how you're supposed to feel, you know, with an epidural and all the pushing and, you know, forceps, that's pretty traumatic on the body too. So, but essentially we got back to the operating room, you know, they were able to get me on the table and everything completely numb. So I couldn't feel anything anymore, like contractions. And then, yeah, they did the C-section and she was born at, I believe, like 7:37.
Oh, was your husband able to be back there with you then? And everything up until this point was pretty much like routine, right?
Yeah, everything was pretty routine, minus the fact that everyone was like running and putting all these things on carts to take to the operating room and garb on and stuff for the operating room. But yeah, he was there the whole time, which was super nice.
Wonderful. So then what did the next step look like leading into Rosalie's here? We're happy. I'm assuming she's alert and crying and everything's good.
Yeah.
Then so, things take a turn.
Yeah. Things took a turn for the worse at this point. So she was born. She was totally fine. She was as healthy as could be. She was a big old 8-pounder. And I just remember, you know, Adam was holding her and they were showing me the baby. And I just felt so sick, so, so sick at that point, just kind of lifeless. And I remember telling the anesthesiologist that was at my head the whole time that something didn't feel right. I felt really sick. And they told me, you know, she reassured me that everything was okay. They were giving me all the correct medicine that was needed. And so, you know, gosh, I think it was like, felt like 20 minutes went by and they were still working on me and I could hear a lot of suctioning, which kind of concerned me because I felt pretty bad, like I was losing a lot of blood. And by the sounds of it, it also kind of reassured me I was, and I could hear the medicines that the doctor was giving me because unfortunately I am a nurse and that makes it hard in those situations to know what they're saying.
You know, more than the average person, it can make it hard.
Yeah, it's a good and it's a blessing and a curse. So, yeah, so I just knew something was wrong. I knew I didn't feel right. But he said that the OB said that they got everything under control. The bleeding had stopped. They were able to close me up. And we were able to go to the recovery room with my husband and Rosalie.
So, baby's good. Dad's there with you. You're still feeling kind of crummy and something's wrong. You feel like something's wrong.
Yeah.
Been in the recovery room.
So yep. So we were in the recovery room for about, I would say probably 15 minutes. And I just, you know, I remember Adam, my husband, kind of standing off in the corner. It was a smaller room and there were still quite a few doctor or nurses. And I don't know if the doctor was in there at this point, but, so I just, all of a sudden I just felt a huge gush come out of my body, regardless that, you know, I was completely complete numbness from the epidural and stuff. I felt just like a loss. And I was like, you guys, something's really wrong. And so then they looked and, you know, they just started weighing pads just by the seconds, you know, there was so much blood loss. And, the doctor came in and, he did like a, and, you know, he took the speculum and did a pretty invasive, you know, what do you call it? Like a
exam.
There we go. Yep. An invasive exam just to kind of see where the bleeding could be coming from, what's going on. You know, all while my poor husband's in the room having to witness this whole event, holding the baby. But the doctor found, they believed I had a cervical laceration and uterine atony. So they thought putting in a Bakari balloon would make the uterus start contracting more. So then he said, we're going to go back into the operating room. I'm going to put this balloon in your uterus to help it contract because it wasn't contracting. And at that point, I was so, so scared. I felt so sick just from all the blood loss. I was kind of going in and out of consciousness at this point as well. I just told the doctor, please just take my uterus out. I know I will never have another child again, you know, this way, because I truly can never go through feeling this way again. And he said that it was kind of like their standard protocol to do the balloon first. And then if that weren't to work, then they would go other routes. But so I trusted him and I said, okay. And I told my husband bye. And they went up to like the room where I was supposed to be after the recovery room. And I went back in for my second surgery.
Wow. Yeah. So did they tell you how many units of blood you had lost, or was, I guess maybe not after the initial, you know, hemorrhage experience?
Not initially. So they told me that I lost about 5 liters of blood, which is all of my blood volume.
Wow.
So I went through like a massive blood transfusion, and I got 20 units of blood product. Actually, I did get my records from the hospital after the fact, and I was able to find out that I actually got 24 units of blood product.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So they took you back again to the OR. Were you under general anesthesia the second time?
Yes. So that was my main concern. I'm like, I cannot be awake for this. And they reassured me, yep, they were going to put me under anesthesia to do the second surgery, which was great.
Okay. So when you came out of that surgery and woke up in recovery, you know, what happened? What did they tell you?
Yeah. So I woke up and, you know, I just remember waking up and they said that it worked. The surgery worked, which was just so relieving. And I was so happy to hear that. And I think at this, I was pretty groggy, obviously, just waking up from anesthesia. I think my husband was there for that point. And actually, no, he wasn't there yet. He hadn't made it down yet. So then about, I think, I don't know the time frame, but just a little bit later, I said, you know, you guys, something's wrong. I felt terrible again. I just felt that the rush out of my body. And they looked, and sure enough, I was bleeding out again. And they were doing the same thing they did the first time, you know, weighing pads and running me back to the OR at this point.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, they didn't stop the bleeding.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So they made another choice then to take you back to the OR again.
Yep.
For a third time.
I was taken back to the OR for a third time. At this point, I knew I was going to die if they didn't get this out of my body in a decent amount of time. So I was just telling, you know, I was just like, you have to get this out. You have to get this out. And they were saying they would, but they wanted my husband to come tell me goodbye because it was that bad. And I didn't really recognize it at the time.
Oh my goodness.
So my husband came down. He told me bye. He said I was just as white as a sheet. You know, I just didn't look like myself. I was convulsing uncontrollably just from all the blood loss. It was honestly what it would feel like if you were shot and, you know, losing all your blood. And yeah, so that was terrifying. And I just remember I kept staring at random spots on the big surgical lamp above my head. I just kept staring at random circles on there, just not losing focus because I knew if I did, I was going to die. And my husband left, and I think I signed a consent or some sort of form for surgery somehow. I remember that because I just couldn't believe that I was signing a form.
That does not seem like an ideal situation.
No, not at all. And I just remember praying to God, just saying, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. And just right before they put me down under for my last surgery, I just had a peace. I don't know. I had some sort of peace in my mind thinking, you know, Adam is such a good dad and my girls will be fine, you know, if I don't come out of the surgery alive.
That is heartbreaking and like eye-opening all at the same time. That moment of, you know, it is what it is, and thinking that you could be one of those women that are included in that maternal mortality number. It's just, it gives me goosebumps. I can't even imagine what you're going through in that moment. So you go into the surgery a third time and you're thinking, just do whatever you have to do at this point. Make me feel better.
Yeah. At that point I was so desperate just for life. I needed them to just do something. And so that surgery began, and that was a big surgery. So this is where they were able to find that the cervical laceration actually must have went up into my uterine artery, and that's where the major bleeding was coming from. So they were, you know, in order to get that to stop, they had to do a hysterectomy. So they took my uterus out and were able to cauterize everything off. And I was under, you know, I was on the operating table for a good, I think, gosh, it was probably like 6 hours or so. Just getting them, trying to get them to control the bleeding, just because I just wouldn't stop bleeding even after the fact they were packing my abdomen, you know, with gauze and towels, trying to get it all to stop. And
yeah, I would imagine at that point your body has gone through so much trauma that it doesn't even know what to do with itself.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. So talk to me a little bit about DIC. You also developed DIC because of this bleeding. Is that right?
Yes. So I ended up going into DIC, which is essentially just where you're losing so much blood that you're actually losing all your clotting factors, which makes your blood stop, or which makes your body stop bleeding. So I was just kind of bleeding out profusely at that point. And I was just lucky enough that the hospital I was at had the blood product I needed, you know,
yeah,
platelets and, you know, everything, to the point, you know, that it saved my life.
So after you're in recovery now, you're waking up from anesthesia. Do you remember your first thought? Do you remember that moment of, I'm still here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like the best feeling in the world. I remember I was choking. I was probably choking on like the tube down my throat. I'm not sure. But I just remember being so unbelievably shocked that I was actually alive. I truly thought I wasn't going to make it. And just, I was so happy. You know, I was just shocked.
Wow. So explain to me what happens from there. Because I would imagine your doctor came back in and... What did they say to you? I guess, what can you say to a patient?
Right. What can you say? That's a really good point. So the hospital I was at luckily had an ICU. So I was transferred to the ICU, and I just kind of remember waking up and Adam was there. And I just remember, you know, seeing my mom walk in the room, which was the best feeling in the world. Cause you know, when you're in that situation, there's nothing like seeing your mom or the person that cares for you, you know, has cared for your whole life. And it was just so nice. It felt like waking up from a bad dream. And that was just one of the best things. And just being able to have my mom and my husband there at the same time, I was so shocked because it was COVID and, you know, we could only have one visitor at all times, but they made the special exception for my family, which was, I was so thankful for. But yeah, the doctor ended up, everything was pretty groggy at this point. And I think, you know, part of my mind has kind of erased some things from my memory just due to trauma. But
sure,
I do remember the doctor coming in that early that morning. And, you know, because I was back, it was about 4:30 in the morning that I got to the ICU. And keep in mind, Rosalie was born at 7:37 p.m. on July 3rd. So it was a long night for everyone.
Yeah.
And he just said, you know, here's what happened. Sometimes these things happen and there's just no, they don't know why. So I was never really given like a specific reason of how this could have occurred. You know, was it the forceps? They don't know. Was it the actual, was it my anatomy? They don't know. Was it from pushing? They don't know.
Wow. So was Rosalie able to be with you then while you were in the ICU? What did that look like?
Yeah, so I really wanted to see her right away. I was so excited. You know, it feels like Christmas morning when you have a new baby. And I just was so, so excited to see her. And they were like, you know, maybe we should just wait a little bit and let you rest. You've been through a lot. And I was like, no, I need to see her. So they brought her in and I got to hold her, you know, for a little bit, which was really great. But ultimately, Adam and I were both so, so tired. We had to sleep almost that whole day, it felt like. Yeah, and I couldn't care for her for several days. And honestly, either could my husband. He had been through, you know, a terrible amount of stress as well. And it was just a lot for both of us. So the nurses in the nursery were really great, and they helped us out with her a lot.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
How long were you in the ICU?
Yeah, I was in the ICU for about 3 days, and then I was moved just to, like, the high-risk floor.
Did you, were you intending to breastfeed after this delivery, and how was that impacted, if so?
Yeah. Yep, so I was intending to breastfeed Rosalie because I had breastfed Willow for a little bit of time, and I enjoyed it, and I was really looking forward to it. I was just so fatigued, though, and I was so sick just from everything that I had gone through that I was just barely even doable, you know, and I had the support in the hospital, the lactation consultants, nurses, you know, everyone was rooting me on, and it was great, but I just didn't have the strength or the power in me to cluster feed her, you know, every hour until my milk came in. So I just said, you know what, I'm just going to not do this right now because I need to heal myself, and I was able to give her formula. But then sure enough, when you take the stress of having to breastfeed, of course my milk came in, and then I was able to breastfeed her for about 2 weeks. But yeah, my supply completely plummeted.
Yeah, your body went through just unfathomable amounts of trauma in a very short period of time.
For sure.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. Was postpartum hemorrhage something that you had even... You were a nurse, so you're a nurse. So you probably have heard of it before, but how much was it on your radar before this experience?
Not at all. Honestly, it's one of those things you don't think it's going to happen to you until it does. You know, it wasn't something that was really ever brought up. We never really talked about it. It was always like my blood pressure, you know, things along those lines. It wasn't something that was really brought up at like visits or things like that. It was really never on my radar, and which was unfortunate because I think if we were a little bit more prepared for something like that, that could go wrong. It just would have been better in the moment, just kind of to know what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, postpartum hemorrhage is not something, you know, you hear about it when you take a birth class or, you know, just reading birth books and stuff like that. But, you know, you always think, yeah, that's not going to happen to me. That's
right.
Not going to happen to me, you know? And yeah, that's something we need to talk about it more. We need to share these stories and get this information out. So hopefully, you know, God forbid somebody does experience a hemorrhage, you know, maybe it'll help them process what's happening or recognize it earlier or something like that. Yeah,
completely.
How was your support after all of this was said and done? So that was your last trip to the OR. They did the hysterectomy, you got out of the ICU, you're on the road to recovery, which I'm assuming was a long one. How was your support system, you know, in dealing with this traumatic experience, you know, family, friends, did you have professional support? What's that looking like? And I know this is still a recent experience. You know, she's just over a year, right?
Yeah.
So what does it look like for you, kind of, you know, the support you got and how you're dealing with this traumatic experience?
Yeah, so my support system was just unbelievable. Obviously, Adam and I, we both have great family, wonderful, amazing friends. Honestly, one of the best things that was done for us was we had a meal train set up. So we received meals, you know, once a day for about a month, which was just a godsend because we also, you know, had a toddler at home. I couldn't lift anything heavier than a milk jug for like 6 weeks, wow, which was really hard. And honestly, just like the fatigue and everything from losing so much blood was just, it took me, you know, about a month to get back to kind of a little bit of normal. So that was huge. The support from the doctors was great. I ended up, you know, I was discharged, and then the next day I went into the clinic for a visit. I had a very, very, very big fear of dying after the fact, obviously. I was just scared to be alone. I was scared, I was going to bleed out. Any spot of blood was terrifying to me. I would have really, traumatic dreams about blood and things like that. So that was scary. I got, help from a therapist, which was great. I recommend that highly. But I ultimately, it's been going really good. I find the more I talk about it and the more I kind of process it through, talking to others is super helpful.
Yeah, that's really, really great to hear. Of your support network sounds amazing. Yeah. So I guess to kind of wrap this up, what have you taken away from this experience that you want to share with other people who are thinking about having children or are currently pregnant? What would you like to share with them about?
Yeah. So I would just like to say it's such a blessing to be able to bear a child and, go through labor and delivery and all that good stuff. But there's also just so many things that can go wrong. And it's just so important to do your research and just to be super prepared. Make sure your spouse, your family members, everyone is prepared. And just have everything, it sounds bad, but you always want to think of like what the worst case scenario could be, because you never know if it's going to happen to you or not. And it probably won't, which is really good, but just to keep it in the back of your mind. And research is so important. And also donating blood is just such a huge, huge thing. It's what saved my life, especially during COVID. There's been such a shortage of blood product. It's something that is so needed right now.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Allie, for sharing this story. This is, a really intense, emotional story to share with people. So we really thank you for opening up about this, in a public way to help educate other families on this really, really important topic. So thank you so much.
Most definitely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Baby Weight Podcast. If you are interested in learning more about the conditions talked about today in Allie's birth story, uterine didelphys, postpartum hemorrhage, or any of the other conditions, please check out the show notes and we'll have links to resources there. If you're interested in learning more about Omaha Better Birth Project, our mission, and how you can support us, please hop online at www.omahabetterbirth.org. And don't forget to subscribe.